Okay, good evening, everyone. We're going to try to be respectful of everyone's time, especially on a Thursday night. We said we start at 8 o'clock, and it's past 8 o'clock, so we're going to start. First of all, a big yashar koach to everyone who came tonight. Like I said, a Thursday night. I know you all want to watch the Patriots and the Jets. Okay, you probably don't. Only I do, probably. At least one of the teams is good. No, but seriously, first of all, a big yashar koach to Eli Mensur and his entire team for putting this together tonight. This is, we've talked about a lot of times, and we don't have to say it, we can say it a million times tonight, but, you know, these types of topics, end-of-life planning, things like that, even the way it sounds, the language is like, we don't like it, we don't like to talk about it, but it's incredible, that's why it's so important to have these conversations, because it's something we don't like to talk about. And that ignoring it is not a good idea. A huge thank you, of course, to our presenters this evening, Esther Luber, Evitzin Basi Talbis, and Eric Schwartz. We're going to introduce each of them as they come up. But just a big thank you to lending us their significant expertise in their respective fields this evening. Each presenter is going to have a lot to share with you tonight. And so I'm going to leave the details of each of their presentations to them. But I thought I'd share a few perspectives just from where I sit as a community rabbi, the things that I see, and why it makes me so proud and happy to see so many of you here tonight, and why we're doing this in general. The decision to make sure you have life insurance, to have a healthcare proxy, a living will, etc., and a will, and a halachic will, are not something that a person does for themselves. It's not a chesed you do for yourself. It's a chesed that you do, an incredibly important act of chesed that you do for your spouse, for your children, and for any other close relatives of yours. And I think it's really important to know that. We sometimes not interested in dealing with some of the questions that come up tonight. And we should remind ourselves it's not about ourselves. Just like everything we've done as a spouse or as a parent has never been about ourselves, this is just an extension of all of the many selfless things that we all do in our relationships with the most important people in our lives. Rav Moshe Feinstein writes in a tshuva that it is not considered an act of bitachon, an act of trust in Hashem, to declare that I don't need to get life insurance. Hashem will provide. All right, we'll put the son-in-law, father-in-law joke aside for right now. Hashem will take care of it. That is not, it's not the Jewish approach. Right? The Jewish approach is that we obviously recognize that everything in our life, Kadosh Baruch Hu, you know, makes decisions about our life, etc. And we trust that the things that happen in our life are because Hashem wants them for us. But that doesn't mean that we are expected to sit, we don't sit at home. Moshe gives this example, because you don't sit at home and not go to work and say Hashem will provide. You say, Hashem has put me in this world to be responsible and to go get a job and make money. And Rav Moshe says the same thing with getting life insurance. It's not something that that is in any way a lack of trust in Hashem, just the opposite. It's the right, appropriate, responsible thing to do. And it's when it's true by life insurance, it's true in the other areas as well. The same is true with a living will or healthcare proxy. So many people don't want to have the conversations that Rebbetzin and Tablis will talk to us about, the important conversations that we need to have. And we figure it'll get taken care of when the time comes. But we don't want to think about even what that time might look like. And we don't consider the real life challenges that we're placing in front of our spouse, possibly, in front of our children, when we haven't discussed what it is that we'd like to have done or not done, or who it is that's going to make those decisions, which rabbi should you be asking those questions to? And when families who otherwise, unfortunately, or fortunately, otherwise have gotten along beautifully, in that moment, when the question becomes, well, how do we make this decision? What approach should we take? Unfortunately, I've seen it myself firsthand. You can tear a family apart, making these, you know, when the parent has not said, I'll just tell you personally, I told my parents, there are two rabbis in my family, me and my older brother. I told my parents, do not under any circumstances make me or my brother the deciding rabbi. I said, choose a third party rabbi. that we'll go to. Why? Because I don't want to be in a position where I'm fighting with a Khalila. I have a wonderful relationship with my brother. But Khalila, to be arguing about that in that moment, it's too intense, it's too much responsibility. And I need it to be a decision that they've made. And unfortunately, it's probably maybe most true, maybe the most detrimental when it comes to the questions of inheritance. This one probably is worth a short halachic introduction, so I'll just give you a short introduction about the inheritance point. And that is that the halacha is that a firstborn son receives double. And we're not here to discuss the whether we think this is a great idea or a bad idea. I'm just telling you what the halacha is, okay? The halacha is that when a person passes away, they have a firstborn child. Let's say they have three sons and a daughter, let's just say, okay? So that's what I have. You have three sons and a daughter. And let's assume that your son is the oldest. Okay, so the halacha would state that the daughter gets nothing, and that the oldest son gets double, and then the other two sons split with the left. So that's what the halacha would say. Okay, so if a person doesn't have a halachic will, that's halachically what's supposed to happen. Again, people can decide, the siblings can decide to split it equally if they'd like. But what happens, and this sometimes happens, it doesn't always happen, but sometimes happens, that you have siblings who already don't get along so well. Or one's the different hashkafa, right, than the others. And one decides to take another sibling to Beis Din, and there's no halachic will. So all of a sudden, we find ourselves with sibling chaos and years of, you know, people taking each other to court and all kinds of crazy things that happen with siblings who otherwise, again, got along relatively well. These are the types of questions that come up. And again, they can come up anyways to a certain extent, but they're made much more complicated and much more difficult when we, as the individual, haven't made decisions for them. If these decisions have been made already and they're put in writing in the proper forms, etc., then so many of these questions become moot and there's nothing to talk about, there's nothing to argue about because the person already signed and sealed and finished it years ago. And many of those decisions have been made already. And you take the level of responsibility, the emotion out of it, and you allow your spouse and children the opportunity, the ability, in a moment that is unfortunately already very difficult, to have one less difficulty to have to deal with. And oftentimes, to be honest, maybe the greatest difficulty, you're trying to deal with whatever's happening in front of them, and then people are fighting. It just makes the whole situation so much worse. And when the individual has made those decisions already ahead of time, it makes it so much better and so much easier to deal with. So that is why it is just such an important thing that we're doing tonight, providing the opportunity for people to know what it is that you have to do, what it is you have to think about, the decisions you have to make that you have in front of you. And great experts here in their fields who can really show that to us and allow us to understand, you know, the exact details of what to do. I'll add, of course, that certainly there are halachic pieces to all of these things. The goal tonight's not a shiur, so we're not going to sit and tick apart every single halachic detail. Each presenter is going to present to you what, you know, with their expertise, which I, you know, already have a lot of confidence in. We've had a lot of conversations ourselves about what they're going to present, so I'm not worried about any of that. If anyone has, and you will, you may have, you know, particular individual questions. First of all, I'll be here afterwards to answer any questions you have, you know, informally afterwards. And certainly in the days and weeks that follow, if these are things you're going to want to do, fill out some of these forms, etc., I'm here to help you. I've done it with many people in the past. I'm here to help you move, you know, one step at a time. So if you're left at the end with, like, some individual specific questions, that's fine. That's normal. That's, you know, probably, you know, it would be reasonable to assume you'd be left with some questions. Obviously, presenters will answer a lot of your questions. But if there's some things left over, and certainly some halakhic ones, you don't have to worry. Certainly, I'm going to be here to help you and guide you as you try to make some of these decisions. So again, I really, again, just thank everyone for being here tonight, and really look forward to a meaningful evening together. So we're going to hear from three speakers tonight. Our first speaker is going to be Rebbetzin Basi Taubes. Rebbetzin Taubes is the Director of Community Outreach at Ematai, and been doing really wonderful work on this issue of, you know, living wills, healthcare practices, etc. And we really, really appreciate Representative Tavis joining us this evening.
Thank you. Okay, I hope I have enough. So Ellie, kind of amazing. So if everyone can take one, and of each of these sheets, and we just pass them on. ask them a lot. Okay, thank you. Because I'm the director of community outreach, how many of you have heard of AMA Topic before tonight? Oh, I'm doing a good job.
Brody was here last year.
Oh, that's why. Yeah. Okay. So he's done a very good job. I'm going to take all the credit, but I'm not going to tell him that. Song. Yes, he was here as scholar in residence. Okay. The Ramakan already set this up for you, but I want you to think, whenever I have this conversation, and I've really gone on a mission to make sure that everybody signs, and a lot of healthcare directed, make sure that people do that. It's like people stop inviting me over. Also, my previous life, I worked in oncology. So my children, if this is like, we've been talking about death and dying since they're small children, and they actually tell me there's not enough therapy that they can go through. But I want to see, can we as a group normalize conversation about the fact that we're all mortal, and at some point we're not going to be here, and we hope that whatever our journey is, that we are able to make all decisions for ourselves. So what happens if we can't make those decisions for ourselves? The rabbi sort of already set you up, where if you start thinking about these conversations, you have them in position, in conversation, actually I'll have to have one conversation, I'll give it back. Okay, you have this conversation from a position of thinking about caring, that the people that you care the most for, that you make a plan for, right? You think about your whole life, everyone you love, you make a care for. I would say that, you know, my husband once did, I came home from work, he planned an entire vacation for me. I hadn't been with him any time. It was like the ultimate love. Some of you may know I'm very involved in a project here in Tina. I'm going to give a plug to that, the Buy It, which we're building homes for people with developmental disabilities, kosher Shoma Shabbos homes. I have an adult son with a disability. I have to make a plan for him. If anyone has any children who have special needs or have particular needs, you know that they take 90% of your work and 95% of your heart. And we make this plan because I adore them, not because I need to get him out of my house. So if we have this conversation, have that in mind about the people that you love, and that's where you're coming to this conversation. This is a little bit of a talkless workshop. I'm not going to just talk. We're going to just, did everyone get one? Yeah? I can figure it out to you now. Okay. All right. The one you have in front of you that says the RCA, I just want to say that we have, this is the RCA approved one. Amitai did this for the RCA. We have a different one. The other one, the difference between the two, which we're not presenting today, on the other two we have an organ donation option, which is on the other, and if you want to talk to me about that afterwards, I'm happy to talk to you about that. Okay? So we're going to skip the first few pages because they give you instructions on how to fill out this form, and it's not such a complicated form to fill out, it's a complicated form to think about. So we're looking at this page that says personal information. Okay? So this is not a couples form. Every single person has to fill in it. Okay, so just to know that. Pretty straightforward. Put your name, your address, your telephone, and your date of birth. After that, it gets to be a little bit more complicated. Because the next thing we're talking about is picking a healthcare proxy. So what does that mean when you pick a healthcare proxy? That means that at any time you cannot make a decision for yourself. For whatever reason, either cognitively there's a problem or you're unconscious or something else happens, that you need to choose somebody else to make decisions for you. So I'm going to ask you, who would that person be for you?
Spouse.
Okay. Anybody else? Yeah. I'm sorry? Yeah. Daughter? Okay. So I would say that's pretty typical. But I have to say, in my own life, and I have one thing, whenever you do these talks, and anyone, I'm sure the rabbi will tell you, but anyone else who ever gives talks, people end up hearing a lot about your own family. It's like, you have to sign a disclosure that you're going to allow, anyway, I do have permission from my family. Actually, when I had my healthcare proxy, my husband, who is smarter than your average bear, so has nothing to do with intelligence, he's actually not my healthcare proxy. In our family, because I'm a healthcare professional, all healthcare matters are mine. So even though he is smart as can be, when anything comes to health, it's when he goes to the doctor, he calls me, could you talk to the doctor? Okay, because it's like what many things in my life, like I don't want to know anything about, you know? Once Waze came around, I can now drive everywhere. So basically, you know, so that's still okay. But there's some things, that's his department, that's my department. In healthcare, it's not that I don't want whoever the healthcare proxy is to consult with him, but it's not a good place for him.
My oldest daughter has actually been friends with her family. So I've been friends with her for a long time. Also, smarter than your average bear, deep thinker, we are very, very close. It would be a terrible job for her. Why? Because she, I don't have any, you know where she'll reach out this
week? She's
been wrong. How come I'm the last one to ask?
Because your topic is a woman.
She would also be a terrible choice. Why? She is a people pleaser. Anyone meets her, she likes people. People like her. She never wants to make waves. I got her permission to say this. She thanked I just had a baby. And, okay, they asked, could the residents and fourth-year medical students come in for the delivery? Ladies, how many of you would have said yes? Anybody? She did not want to say no to them. Okay, right, because they have to learn, and she never wants to make waves. It's her personality, because she's a wonderful human being, but not a great healthcare proxy, right? I have another daughter, don't mess with her, okay? Anyway, if you ever want someone to get angry for you, she's the person to call. So I chose her, because I know that if I can't make decisions, I want something in a healthcare environment. I work in healthcare, so I know. It is not, you're very vulnerable there. You want someone who can speak for you and maybe able to answer questions, but also going to be your advocate in that situation. Often people keep someone in their life who's in medicine. Also, because as you know, medicine is a language, it's like speaking a foreign language. I always ask this question to groups, okay? And don't be, it's not to offend anybody. I'm gonna just ask a group and really just know that most people can't answer this question. How many of you know the difference between a heart attack and a cardiac arrest? Okay. How many of you are not sure? Let's do it that way, not sure. Okay, all right. And the reason I ask this question, it's a pretty basic question, and think about it, a cardiac arrest, you think your heart arrests, it stops, right? And a heart attack, usually a heart attack can lead to a cardiac arrest. A heart attack is not your heart to stop. And I think about this as such a basic question because there are many questions and things that people talk about to patients in hospitals. You're anxious, you're upset, and it's a language you don't understand. So sometimes, not always, people do choose their healthcare proxy to be someone who speaks that language. Okay? What happens if your healthcare proxy is not available? So we have a place here, we should have you pick an alternate. You can even pick a second alternate. One of the reasons, so very often I get this question, I want everyone to be involved in this discussion. I don't want to choose a child. You know, what will my other children feel? How will they feel about it? So I think that that is a conversation to have. Yeah, I want all my children to be involved in any medical decision making, but somebody has to be, the buck stops here, they have to be the voice for the family. There was recently a very small study, but it was a study that they actually looked at Orthodox families in the ICU. It was done by, not by Orthodox doctors, but just by doctors that work in ICUs, about their relationship and end-of-life issues with their Orthodox patients. I think there were 40 physicians on the study, so it was a very small study. It was the first one of its kind. So I'm just, you know, what would you think that came out? That we're so easy to work with Orthodox Jewish patients. I wish all my patients were. No, that is not what happened. They actually said this was a big issue, that very few Orthodox Jews had healthcare proxies. They did not know which member of the family they should speak to, because it looked like who's in charge. So this brother, and we know this. Then the sister comes through and says, "Doctor, do you have a minute? Could you come talk to me outside?" And they're saying completely opposite. They have completely opposite views on what happens. So that was one thing. I wanted just to share with you that they did say something positive about us as a community, that we're always with our family members. That it's very rare for someone to be alone. So, and I said, yeah, that's true. And actually some of this conflict happens really actually from a deep place of love. But how can we avoid conflict? That you've had a conversation with one person in your family, and that person is your healthcare proxy. In order to vent machlokas, a terrible time for the other members to find out, that they were your healthcare, that if your daughter thought she was your healthcare proxy, but you chose your son, a terrible time for her to find out about that is during a crisis. So So it is a good idea to make sure that if you've made this decision, that actually, that the children know that you've chosen each, which child you've chosen. Okay. Anybody have any questions about that or thoughts? I gave this talk, go ahead, yes.
Just a question about, sure. about the process. You mentioned the person that should have the personality to handle discussing.
They can, yeah. Right.
But you also said they should know about healthcare and medicine.
They can. It's, and I'm just giving you options.
I mean, most people probably know the other child who know that, but that's not what you're saying.
No, no. It's been, and quite honestly, I gave this talk in a shul, one of the local shuls,
yeah.
And This woman says, oh, my son is a neurologist. No way is he going to my healthcare practice. He'll have me, I'll have a cut, and he'll be saying, don't get a red care. But it's just very often if people do have a child or their spouse is in medicine, that person can speak the language in the hospital. They're less and more secure. Yeah.
Different question.
Yeah.
You talked about the alternate, and to avoid mock looking, if you have more than one, did that alternate get any decisions if the other one isn't around?
If the one's not available.
If one's not available.
And actually, I appreciate you saying that because actually, I got a lawyer just got in touch with me this week just from me. She thought that was unclear. And I've given this talk a lot of times, and she said for just that reason. And so actually, we do have to change the language on that. So it's actually, yeah. Go ahead.
How important do you put geographic proximity in terms of factors in the decision?
Okay, I think that is an excellent point, so thank you. I think that being nearby is very important. I think if it's feasible to have a child that lives nearby, that can come to the hospital and be in the hospital today, yes, you can meet in many other ways, but someone that actually can come and be around, that's ideal, not always possible. I'm going to throw something out, which I'm starting to do to all the communities, for us to think about as just members of a community. A lot of people today, as we know, don't get married. They don't have a spouse. They don't have children. There are people that are alone in our own community. In every community I've gone to, there are people that always come over to me and talk to me about the fact that they have nobody to be their healthcare proxy. So as the people, and you put this together, and maybe I know you're looking for more work, but maybe just to think about that maybe in this community, in Young Israel here, that maybe you think, are there people that would be willing to be a healthcare proxy if someone didn't have somebody to speak for them? So I want people to start thinking about that because it's a reality. Our community is getting older. People live very far away from children. People are estranged from children. And just people sometimes just didn't, they don't have any relatives. So anyway, I just want, as you're thinking about this, this is one personal and one another thing that would be for the community to think about that. Okay? All right. And I want to just keep an eye on the time. So how many do we have time? You okay? Yeah. Okay. The next is this part I declare. This is the legal part of this document that you declare, and if you read it, it says, my proxy is full authority to make decisions for me about my health care, including end-of-life care. If I'm not able to make or communicate healthcare decisions for myself, this includes my desire that I hereby direct my proxy that all decision-making about my health care should be done according to Jewish law and custom. And it goes through all those things like grant my proxy all this permission. And note that in this document, if you read this, we're not saying if this happens, don't do this. If that happens, don't do that. And that used to be actually, I think it was very common in medicine. Someone brought me, so a couple came to see me last week to bring me to talk about their father who's in their 90s. And he had written something in 2003, what would have been an advanced healthcare directive. It basically was a short story. You know, it was pages and pages and pages. So two things about that. No one's reading it. And secondly, it is impossible for anybody in this room to think about everything that might happen and what you would want done. And an example I like to give, do you remember Superman? Christopher Reeve, remember him? Okay. And it looks in my youth, he was like a heartthrob, right? And if someone would have said when he was the heartthrob Superman, that you're gonna fall off a horse and you're gonna be a quadriplegic, he would have said, I would never want to live that way. But not only did he live that way, he became an advocate for people who are in wheelchairs and disabled.
So I always give that as an example that you, one does not know what one would want to live with. And also one can't make a decision about that for somebody else. I heard this story from Rabbi Tendler a long, long time ago. A long time ago, Rabbi Tendler and Rabbi Schachter had, it was like a machlokas about the definition of death, about brain death, a lot of discussion, and I went deeper to Rabbi Tendler to see if he spoke at Beth Am. We're talking about a very, very long time ago. But this story that he told stayed with me. He said that he went into a room, he was doing rounds with one of the other physicians, and he went into a room, and there's an old, old man lying in the bed who has a tube in every orifice of his body. And he's thinking, what are they doing to this poor man? Never think of it. I'm just mooching this poor man in the body. They're keeping him alive. And the man called, said, Rabbi Tendler, could you come over? He called him over. He could barely hear him. He said, please stop him, and I should live a little longer because my granddaughter's about to have a baby. It's big stress to be alive to see a great-grandchild. Now, would I know, seeing this man, that that would have meaning for him? No. Which is why it's important. Would he have known, when he was a young man, that he'd want to live this way even a little longer? But it's important that his healthcare, meanwhile, he had his own voice, so he could say what he wanted, but that his family would know that that was a value to him. So I give these like very extreme stories to know that you can't really determine more than what you'd want. And as people get older, what they want may change. So that is one of the reasons, just in general in healthcare, they've gotten away from writing lots of details that I want this and I don't want that, okay? So again, this is the legal part of this document. At the end, you pick your rabbinic consultant. When I ask, and there are rabbis in the room, but I feel pretty comfortable as saying this, okay? Go for it. I would say, when I started doing this, sometimes the rabbis were there, most of the time they were not. I appreciate the fact that you are here. That I would ask, who is the person you'd want your family to consult with? I would say 80% of the time, it was their shul rabbi, right? And why? The person that knows them the most, right? That knows them the most. I sometimes have this question, people say, why do I need a rabbi? Okay, that comes up very often, and I want to tell you that having, even when I speak to less religious audiences, tell people you don't understand the benefit of having a rabbi, of asking someone. I think, and I hope it's okay, I think very often people think that if I ask the rabbi, he's going to say, no matter what happens, you have to keep me alive. That is absolutely not true, it's completely untrue. That there are many different scenarios that I'm not going to go into. There are a lot of questions. But I'm going to put something out there that's going to sort of be the reverse. The person in the bed is someone, if you're the healthcare proxy, is someone that you love deeply and you care about. Halacha and medicine are on the same page. It gets you to make decisions that might be very painful, but we live a life of Torah. Torah guides us, that we know that we have a halachic system supporting that decision that we've made. So I'm going to really tell you that having a rabbinic person, if you have, and I'm happy to talk to you privately afterwards about this, I cannot tell you enough about how important that person is and how you make that decision.
Is it permissible to define the rabbi as the local rabbi of your shul? Because I can imagine a scenario where I put Rabbi Krohn and the rabbis actually moved to Israel.
So, can I see
some better? It's important, but a couple of people asked me that question. So I'll just tell you the following. The answer is, well, we can talk about how you can change it if you want to change it.
Okay.
But even if you don't want to change it, I'll make this commitment, either way, people, that if a person feels comfortable and they want to put me on their thing, you have me on your thing. That's whether I'm living here or living anywhere else. That's something that I'm committed to. That's a conversation we're going to have a long time from now, I hope. But I'm being serious. If it's something you're worried about right now, give me the kavod, it's not a kavod, but I'm saying that's something you're comfortable with, and you want me to be the person that you write down on this form, if it's something you want to change, I won't be offended. And base, if you don't want to change it, it would be my honor to take the phone, no matter what time you're in. So I'll just let you know that.
Okay.
Okay. No, but
we're enjoying thinking about that one.
Okay. But actually, so I gave this talk, I think a year ago, maybe not. Okay. And Rabbi Adler was on everybody's, if anyone who had this form already, okay. Rabbi Adler was on their form. And you should, like, a bunch of people, like, oh no, Rabbi Adler was the person that they had on their form. So one thing about this document, I know you're going to go through this. This document is not one and done. And my husband and I just redid ours. Okay, we just redid ours because last time we did them, my kids were all actually very young. We hadn't done it in a long time. This document has to be refreshed. It needs to be refreshed and redone. And there might be a reason that you want to change. Your healthcare proxy is not the right person. You move to Israel, you live here. Life changes. You move away. Your rabbi moves away. You want to have the rabbi that's here. Okay. But one of the other things I just want to share a story that we had from our, we have a 24/7 halachic helpline. So some are for emergencies and some people just have questions, right? So it can be either way. So someone called Rabbi Brody, and maybe you told this story, but I'll tell again. But that someone called Rabbi Brody and he said, yeah, well, we want to talk about his father. And he had a lot of questions for Rabbi Brody about his father. And Rabbi Brody said to him, okay, let's slow this down. Where's your father right now? He says, my father died 2 years ago. But for 2 years, this man was living burdened that he maybe didn't make the right decisions for his father at the end of his life. Okay, so, all right, I mean, some of my best friends are rabbis, so I push them very much, but it really gives the family, if they trust their rabbi, and people should trust their rabbi, I'm gonna actually, for this, there are complicated questions. What happens if your rabbi doesn't know the answer? Like anything else, there are people who are experts that answer those other questions. Again, if you want, as your alternate, in case your rabbi's not available, you can put an alternate. You can also put our number down as your alternate if your rabbi's not available. So that's also an option open to you, if you'd like, okay? But that takes some thought. Then, yes, yeah, sure.
So the way this works is, the person that you send your healthcare proxy consult with the person you say is the rabbi, who's your right? And then the person who is your healthcare proxy makes the ultimate decision in any questions that come up. In other words, the rabbi is consulted and gives input, but the proxy makes the decision.
Right. So this is the difference in some of the other forms that are available right now from some other organizations, where it's been unclear who has the final word. Here the rabbi is very clear that the rabbi is the consultant, right? But I'm glad you brought that up. It's so wonderful for this talk for me, so thank you. I think you keep bringing up things. This is another place of Shaul bias, because it should be your rabbi, right? Not necessarily your children's rabbi. Because you know, essentially, the girl and teen, this kid is in Lakewood, and this kid lives in the Five Towns, and this kid lives in Israel, and everybody thinks that their rabbi, is the rabbi. So really, the person you want is really your rabbi. The person that had a relationship with you, not the one your children are going to. It actually really does prevent a lot of machlokas. Now, is it perfect? I have to tell you, when this is going on, I've been with families that really tears families apart, and we do the best we can. I can't say this document prevents any machlokas, but we try the best we can to set our kids up, to set our spouses up, to set the people that we love up, that they know what our wishes are, okay? So then you sign it, okay? So you sign it in the state of New Jersey. You do not need to have this notarized, okay? But you need two witnesses. Now that's all halachic witnesses. The people can be married to each other, okay? You know, you can go, your neighbors can sign it, your brother can sign it. Okay, this is not halachic witnesses. The only people who cannot sign, and they have to be over the age of 18, the only people who cannot sign it if they have skin in the game, which means that either they're a healthcare proxy or they're inherited from you. Those aren't people that can be your witnesses. So what I recommend, so it's like my own experience, my husband and I, how did I get involved with Amon Kai? I heard Rabbi Brody speak at B'nai Asher, and I brought my husband along. I was so taken with his talk, and I had this whole great idea, we're gonna do this in our shul, and we're gonna do this, we're gonna talk to Rabbi Brody, and we brought the document home, and we knew we needed to redo it, and it went on my husband's desk, which is just, you know, things go there, can never be found again. And sat there for a year and a half, and we didn't do anything with it. So one of the things I'm suggesting, that maybe in a month you pick a signing day and you come and you have bagels and lox or something, you have some food, and people bring it back and you sign each other's healthcare proxies. So that's just a thought about an idea about making sure you get this done. So now we have, that's the legal part of this document. The end pages here is something we put together, which is just about how to have conversation with the people. How do you have conversation? How does your family know what it is you want, right? So last year, and when to have those conversations. So last year, the New York Times, and we still, maybe we weren't reading the New York Times last year either, but this was an article people sent me. Someone from the New York Times wrote that the most important conversation you have to have with your family is about healthcare proxy and healthcare directive. And people should do that at Thanksgiving. It's a great time to have that conversation. So it happens to be, actually my family, we love Thanksgiving. I come from a very big family, and thank God we've been blessed with that. It's an enormous get-together, and we love it. There's no Jewish ritual, and everyone goes home, and no one has to sleep over. We love it, okay? So it's a big family simple in our house. Okay, I said, let me try this. I thought they were going to throw the stuffing at me. You know, it's actually a terrible time to have a conversation like that at a party. It's a serious conversation, and you have to find a time when can you have that conversation. And sometimes you can get a lot of pushback from your children also, or your spouse, or you to your parents, whichever way you're going, if you want to bring it to your parents. Sometimes you're not going to be ready for it, so you have to figure out how that's going to work. I usually tell people that's one of the easy ways to do this. I'm giving you an in. I went to a program at the Young Israel, and they talked about this, and they said we should talk to our family about it. So that can be an in getting people to want to talk about it. I did something with Rabbanit Alyssa at Rabbi Helfgott Shul. Do you know her? Anyway, she's young enough to be my daughter, and we did a role play of something that could happen about, she was talking to me, and I said, and I just shut that down. Actually, what she told me, Mom, if you ever have, you're cognitively impaired, and you can't make decisions for yourself because of dementia, what should I do? I said, put a pillow over my head, right? Okay, but I shut, that's it, right? That's but it's a shutdown of the conversation. I stop the conversation, right? Because I'm not allowing us to actually have an honest dialogue about that. That terrifies me. And what would I want done if that was the position I was in? What would I want? What would I want them to ask the rabbi about? What would I ask the rabbi to ask them about if I couldn't eat or drink anymore by myself? That's a question. This is what I would want. This is what maybe I wouldn't want. There's some things, again, like I said, you don't really know what it is you're going to want. How am I doing? Keep reminding me about time. I'm okay? You're getting my head?
Yeah.
Okay, you can get it. Okay, I'm going to ask you the final question, okay? And think about this, and I feel like I know how most people answer. How much information I think I want to know? One, as little as possible of my condition. Anybody voted for that? Didn't think so. Okay, only general summary information about my condition and my treatment. All the details about my condition and treatment. Okay. I'm just going to throw a question with no answer, because I have this come up as another issue. How sometimes do people feel about an older person that we don't give them all the information because we think it's going to be too much for them? Has anybody in this room ever been in that situation where they didn't tell it? Yeah, right? Yeah? Yeah. Do you want to talk to somebody? Tell a little bit about it?
In a situation where my grandma was in the hospital, and they thought they found a lump by her lungs. She's mid-90s, not exactly the time to maybe start chemo or anything. So her doctor's initial reaction was, let's not tell mom. And okay, I got around my parents, my uncles. There's a disagreement on what should happen. I don't know if there's a health proxy in this situation. Or actually, the health proxy is actually my cousin-in-law. She's a doctor, so thereby she can give her thoughts. She stood back on that one. And they said, no, tell mom. So they tell her. She goes, oh my gosh. And they go and they get another x-ray, and the lump is gone. And so in the end, they scared her. Everything's fine. But it was a moment where it was like, maybe she can't handle it. Maybe she should have a nice way out. The doctor said that. And in the end, either they made the best of the x-ray, or the new x-ray was missing. But that's kind of the punchline. It made it easy.
Amazing. Right. So I gave, I just want to, only because I have this experience now, I've given, we've done these programs on Keep It Up, AD, adult child and an aging parent. Last week, I did a flip. I did something with Mariah, which is Martian Rights, for very, very senior citizens about boundaries between that and their adult children. And the only area that people love their children to be involved, actually, overall, this group, the only thing they didn't like is that their children making medical decisions for them without them being involved. It was like a very interesting thing for me, because we always are looking at things from the other side. It was interesting for me to have that conversation back. So just always think about that. How about this? God forbid, I have a terminal illness. I prefer not knowing how quickly it's progressing. Okay. Only having a very general sense of my prognosis. Knowing the best detailed estimation for how long I have to live. Unsure. Okay. So I'm going to share a story with you about me. So, because I lived it. So we were, you know, medicine has changed a lot. I mean, I've been in healthcare since the early 80s. And back in the early 80s, physicians had a paternal relationship with their patients. They knew, and they gave you, first of all, we didn't have Google, but there was sort of like, well, how much information do people have? So there was, we basically trusted the doctor, and he made decisions of what you would and would not know. Now we have the opposite, right? I run a group for women with metastatic breast cancer. They get information on their portal before their doctor's even seen it. So we have the opposite experience, where people get scans, they don't even know what they mean. And so we have the opposite, because we really have this feeling that patients have the right to know. And based on your answers, that's how you feel, the right to know. I have to say, when my mother, Elva Shalom, was diagnosed, so like in the early, 2003, she was diagnosed with metastatic colon cancer. What we did for her couldn't happen today, because I knew about her diagnosis. I got her on the clinical trial before she even knew she had metastatic colon cancer. And she knew she had a terminal illness. She actually bought a cadaver, and she arranged, made a will. She did all the things we're talking about today, but we never talked to her, especially then. It's a little different now. Then the average lifetime of a person with metastatic colon cancer was 16 months. She lived 15 and a half months. That was like, you know, it was, and pretty much you knew that. Today it's very different because we have much better treatment. We treat much more aggressively. It's different. We did not ever tell her that. And we really kept it, I'm one of five children, we kept that information from her. I remember being in the room with her, in the exam room, I got paged. That was the day we didn't have cell phones, I got paged, I'd go answer my page. Meanwhile, the doctor came in and saw her, and she asked him, I have two grandsons who are going to be bar mitzvah this year. Will I be at their bar mitzvahs? And he said, no. He told her, no, you're not going to be there. I was ready. I walk in the room, my mother is crying. I was ready to kill this physician. I worked very closely with him. And I have to say, having lived through this experience, it was very hard for her to be happy after that. So this knowing every piece of information, it's not for everybody. It's not for everybody. I think today, how many people here in the room are doctors? Okay, so I'm gonna ask the doctor group. If someone asked you a direct question like that, what would you do?
If the person's cognitively aware, they have the right to know the information.
Right, right, right.
It's not like just not at this point.
Right.
Like people don't look at any other way anymore.
Right. But could they have answered it differently? Like, I don't.
Subtly, you're not gonna, you know, give a, you're gonna answer that question more subtly than no.
Right.
But,
I don't.
You better answer the question.
Right, a direct question.
Possible.
It's possible, right. So these are things that people, like, I think their knee-jerk reactions, I want to know everything. I'm not all, and some people 100% that's true, but I'm not sure it's everybody. It's everybody. There are things that we talk about pain. Some people have, you know, we have great ways of treating pain today, but pain medicine, very often you're either asleep or you're not sharp. And my husband and I actually, this was an activity we did, we went out, romantic evening, and we read these questions to each other. But the truth is, it was interesting to find out information even about ourselves. Like, they are interesting to read them. There may be things that I've never really thought about that before. So even talking about pain, we talked about loneliness, right? Some people don't mind being by themselves, right?
Right? So I'm one of five children, and I've had five children. I still have two kids at home. Okay, so I never had empty nest. So I've actually never been alone. I had a roommate in college, then I got married. Okay, I am not great at being by myself. I like being around people. My husband told me he actually doesn't mind being alone. So even when we think about our future a little bit, like what would that look like? I probably shouldn't be by myself, and maybe he wouldn't mind so much. I tell people of a certain age, maybe my age, and maybe even younger, what's your 10-year plan? What's your 20-year plan? What's your 30-year plan? People that you love. You've got someone, they're living in an apartment by themselves. That's great for now. What's 10 years gonna look like? A terrible time to make decisions about life is in a crisis. For some of you, I think this is, maybe some of you have this here at Teaneck, for some reason, some of the older homes have no bathroom on the first floor. Okay, many of the older homes. There was a couple that came to see me, mentally sharp as anything, but physically they're not aging well. There's no bathroom on their first floor. I start talking about, like, what's your plan? Not for tomorrow. So just to start thinking about some of those things, what would that look like? I think about my own house. I tell my kids, if anything happens to me and Dad, just burn the house down, because we have so much stuff there. Start to purge. If you're of a certain age, start throwing stuff out. Nobody wants it. Nobody wants the secondary birthday cards, and nobody wants the turkeys with the handprint that you've been saving. It's just sometimes to think about, which is a little bit off topic, but I always feel like I have to tell people that. I don't work with the organizers, it's not because I'm plugging that, but it's just if anyone has ever had to clean out anybody's house or apartment, it's a disaster. And also people don't have a plan. This is all, tonight's program is all about planning. I'm gonna leave you with this to like think about these questions and look at them on your own in the back, to just, you know, have a conversation about and things about pain, about loneliness, about just so people would have an idea this moment how you feel about that. And again, as people age up, sometimes those discussions and decisions change. Yeah.
For those of us who spend more and more time with our age kids there, is this document legally recognized?
No, there is, and thank you for bringing it up. There's another document. We actually have it on our website. And shocking, it's much more complicated, okay, in Israel. But there, yes, this document is not legal in Israel. But there's Amitai, if you go to amitai.org, there's a site for Israel on that. Yeah. Any other questions? Okay, the other piece of paper I gave out to you is just something we put together. It is like a to-do list. Did you not get it? If I don't have enough, I can get it to you. I didn't bring enough of them. It doesn't seem like I brought enough of them. Okay. I'll get it to you. Or you can get it on our website, but you talk to me after, so I should get it here. If we just put this together, it's just a to-do list of, and it's a very extensive to-do list of things that people should just know about, but I'm gonna leave a lot of that to do in the cover some of that in your discussion. Okay, I'm gonna hear if anybody wants to talk to me afterwards. Thank you so much.
All right. So I have to say, I'm actually blown away by the turnout tonight. Thinking that all of you guys could be home in your pajamas doing whatever you would otherwise do on a Thursday night. So thank you for being here, Kol HaKavod for being here. Thank you to Ellie for putting it together, and it's just Rabbi Krohn and Rebbetzin Taubes. So I'm here to talk about, I guess, an equally depressing topic, the topic of wills and estate planning. And I guess a lot of people ask the question, when should I start thinking about estate planning? And I guess the best response that I ever heard is, if you can tell me when you plan to die, or God forbid, become incapacitated, then I can tell you when you should start thinking about estate planning. So it's a sharp, I think, recognition that really, unfortunately, as we all know, life is extremely unpredictable, and we really don't know, you know, what the future holds for any of us. So I think the short answer is that it's really never too soon to start thinking about estate planning. And I think what that is really means different things depending on the stage of life that people are in. So, you know, for young people who have little kids, you know, probably the most important, the most critical thing is to think about guardianship. You know, who, God forbid, if something happened to you, would be the one to take care of your minor children. And as you age and children get older, I think the factors change. And some of the some of the considerations change. So when we think about estate planning, there are a few different components. One is obviously how assets pass. A lot of the will is the document that does that. And another document that people should also have is a power of attorney, where you give somebody the right to make, to handle your finances if, God forbid, you weren't able to do that on your own. And the last component, which I spend a lot of time talking about with my clients, but which Representative Talvis, I think, has covered very thoroughly, is the healthcare documents, the healthcare proxy and instruction directive. And in terms of wills, I think there are a lot of misconceptions about what the purpose is of a will and what the importance is of it. You know, often I'll start out my meetings with people saying, you know, why are you here? What are your concerns? You know, and people will say, I don't want the government to get my money. I don't want to have to pay taxes. And those are really misconceptions in terms of the importance that it has in estate planning today. There are laws of intestacy, which basically, if a person dies without a will, the government will not get your money. You know, there are laws that are like the default laws in terms of how assets get distributed. And they may not be exactly what people want, but there are laws in place where it's not going to end up going to the government. In terms of tax planning, where we are today is courtesy of the One Big Beautiful Bill that was enacted. There is right now an estate tax exemption of $15 million. So for a married couple, you can basically pass on $30 million without having to think about tax planning. So I think a lot of the things that people think of as, you know, motivation for preparing a will are less critical. But to hit on the themes that Rabbi Krohn has said and that Rabbi Taubes has said, I think really the most important and critical pieces of doing estate planning are to give guidance to your family and to exercise elements of control about, first of all, how your assets get distributed, who is the person in charge of making those decisions, and there are some pitfalls that people don't realize if they don't have wills and how the assets will get distributed. So really, I think those are the critical things when I think about the importance of estate planning in our lives. And to hit on, you know, a few of the common themes, estate planning really has to be a dynamic process, because what was important to people when they were in their 20s and 30s, and the documents that people put in place, very often people will come to me and they'll be in their 50s and 60s, and I'll say, you know, have you ever done this before? Do you have a will? And they say, well, I made a will when my kids were toddlers, and now, you know, they're expecting their own kids. And so, you know, to think about, and very often the people that they have put into place when they created their wills in their 20s and 30s are either no longer around or no longer the people who you would want in charge of, you know, making decisions both in terms of handling your assets and administering your estate. So I think, you know, really the importance of estate planning is to give that guidance to your children. You know, for most people, the most common is that usually when a person dies, they want all of their assets to go to make sure that the spouse is taken care of. After that, to the children, usually equally. But even within that framework, there's a lot of nuance. If there is, you know, a significant inheritance, do you think that your children at age 21 would be ready to receive that inheritance? Or do you want to think about putting structures in place to protect assets, sometimes to protect children from themselves, sometimes to protect them from, you know, external factors. If someone is has potential creditor claims against them, or for example, if a child, God forbid, has a bad marriage, and there is concern that if a child inherited in those assets, then went into their joint bank account, they could become marital assets that would be subject to marital division. Those are all really important things to think about, and what kind of protections we can put in place to anticipate, you know, that those things could happen. So there is that aspect, where there are children with special needs. one has to be particularly careful about the planning that you put into place, because if a child with special needs were to inherit assets, it could make them ineligible for public benefits that they're getting, and that could really be, you know, catastrophic for people who are in certain, you know, work study programs or things like that. So there really are a lot of factors to think about. And I think to the point that Rabbi Krohn said, you know, laying out and putting a plan in place is really a gift that you can give to your family, because often if things are left without the parents' guidance, you know, it really leaves the door open for a lot of familial discord. So there is both the how assets get distributed piece, and also the piece in terms of who would manage a person's estate or who would handle the finances. And I think a lot of the decision making is very similar to the decision making that goes into a healthcare proxy. You know, a lot of people's instinct is either to have the oldest child, but maybe that person is not the person who is most suited to it, to, you know, handling your assets. So really to think critically about and pragmatically about how would things play out. Very often people will want to appoint multiple children to act as co-executors of an estate. And there are reasons that you may or may not want to do that. You know, I think very often you say you have to think practically in terms of, do these kids play well together? Will they work well together? And, you know, sometimes people will say to me, what's the right answer? And I think the answer I always give is, it really depends on the dynamic, and you're the ones who are best in position to determine that. And I think in terms of trying to preserve family cohesiveness and avoid disagreements, I think the best way to handle that is to be as open with your family as you can possibly be, as open as you feel comfortable being. And I think, as Rebbetzin Tavis has alluded to, a lot of kids don't want to hear it. They're not prepared to have that conversation. But the last thing you want is to have someone question your motives and why you chose someone for a certain position when you're not there to answer for it. And I think, you know, we as parents know that our children all have, you know, different strengths. We love them all, we love them equally, but, you know, different people are better suited for different roles. And so to the extent that you can have a conversation with your children or even pose it to them, you know, who do you think would be best to handle the finance piece, the healthcare piece, and, you know, do you think you would be best working together, or would you rather, you know, have separate roles? So I think those are all important conversations to have. And, you know, I think we've seen that very often when a child doesn't know what a reasoning is for something, you know, they'll say, mommy liked this one better, or so-and-so liked this one better. And so to be able to really be clear about the choices that you're making, involve your children in the decision-making process to the extent possible, I think that's the best way for them to be comfortable with the decisions you're making and to hopefully preserve cohesiveness going forward. So I think, you know, obviously everyone works hard for to build their family and to build their legacy, and by putting a will in place and possibly trust that that express your values to your children and let them know what you what is important to you, that's the best way to have family cohesiveness going forward. Yes. Yes, so that's actually a great question, and it's a very simple answer, which is that a halachic will is a completely freestanding document that does not in any way impact your will, and I actually very strongly discourage. I have seen wills where people will build in a halachic piece, and I think that were a halachic will looked at by a court, There could be potential tax implications, gift tax implications, and so I would never want them to be cross-referenced in any way. So if you have a will in place, do a halachic will, and you're good to go. There's nothing that needs to be changed.
Is that something I have to work with an attorney on, or is that something that...
No, it's actually, I'll defer to Rabbi Cohen, but...
All I would just say is that it's totally correct, but I have to say it's totally right. Halachic will, just to explain what it is, it's a separate document, two pieces of paper, which basically declares that the way your Yerusha works in halacha is that it's distributed when a person passes away. If a person has a debt to any other person, those debts are collected before any inheritance goes to any person. So what we do is, you sign this piece of paper. It basically says, let's say a person has $5 million. So they say, I owe, and you say, you give some person in your family who's not, wouldn't get your issue usually, my daughter, $10 million. Okay? So that means that all of that money can't go to anybody in the family because I don't have it. They don't have any money because the money is owed to the person it's owed to. And it says in the document, but if my children agree to follow what it says in the gazillion pages of my will, then that debt will be is null and void. And basically what ends up happening, so basically what that does is it says that there is actually no inheritance in a certain sense. It's all paid out in that way because there's a debt otherwise that would have been incurred. And so it's a way of kind of like it's like an end around how about the inheritance. Yeah. Yeah.
Is it that everybody has to agree, or the executor of the will has to agree?
No, basically...
When you're choosing the person to get that,
I don't know how
does
that work.
No, I think actually it's the halachic heir who basically has to waive their right to inherit in favor of not having to pay out the debt.
Which everybody would, because then they have
right.
No money.
Right.
Okay. So it happens. Yeah. But it's just a separate piece of paper you fill out, and it says everything else that's within this document, you just put on the front page. You know, you attach it separately, whatever. But it's everything inside is now followed because of this document. But that's why it's important. It's an easy document to fill out, and we're happy to make it available to people to do.
Yes.
Yes.
This is a little bit, Aaron. Any thoughts? Are there issues where assets are just so all over the place, and no one even, there's lack of communication, there's lack of organization, and no one even knows where... What happens in that scenario? Or is that something that you work with? Was that more of a financial advisor planning to condense, condense assets and accounts to...
I mean, I would say that as part of the process, you know, when I start, I always send the questionnaire, and it's basically a pretty detailed detailed questionnaire about what your assets are and where they are. And as I often tell people, really one of the purposes is to force you to do your homework, to kind of pull your assets together. Because the truth is, if your assets are spread out and you don't have good records or your heirs don't know where to find them, then assets can get lost. And those are times where unclaimed assets do, after a certain number of years, go to the state. So, I mean, to keep organized files and records of what you have and where it is, you know, that's really part of the gift that you give to your children, because if they have to go and kind of search things out, you know, there's a very good chance that things will fall through the cracks and can get lost.
Eric Schwartz, our final presenter.
Good evening. Thank you, everybody. Rabbi Chester. Ellie, thank you so much. I don't want to keep being like this, but I might have to read a little bit on script, a little off script. I wasn't sure exactly who was the crowd was going to be tonight on a Thursday night. But good evening, everyone, and thank you for coming. Thank you for being here and giving me the chance to talk about something to me. It goes far beyond business or finance. It's something personal. It's something real. It's life insurance. It's now I know when people hear that, those words, they don't always lean forward with excitement. It's not like the thing that everybody really, 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 really likes talking about. But it's real. It's not flashy. It's not fun. But I have to tell you, doing this 22 years, it's one of the most meaningful, loving, and selfless decisions a person can ever make. Because at its core, life insurance isn't only about money. It's about love, it's about responsibility, and it's about protection. And we just think about it for a minute, how many things we protect. You wouldn't drive the car without car insurance. You wouldn't have the home without homeowners insurance, fire insurance, disability insurance, malpractice insurance. There's so many different insurances, but for some reason when it comes to this, you know, people get a little, I don't know what the right word is, but they don't really feel so comfortable talking about it. It's about protection. It's about love. And when you think about all the people that you love, your spouse, your kids, your parents, you would do anything to protect them. I know I would. I'm sure everybody here would do anything they can to protect them. You'd sacrifice. You'd work harder. You do whatever it takes to make sure that they're okay. And that's really, really what life insurance is. It's a way of saying, even if I can't be there, my love will still be there. It's a promise that your family will never face its toughest challenges and toughest moments. Just want to share with you one quick story. I know people like stories sometimes, and to really get a sense of where we are. 22 years ago when I first started, a good friend of mine, we were living in the Bronx at the time, and he says to me, didn't you just go into this field? I said, yes. He says, you know what? We just got married. We have our first child. I think it's a good idea. Why don't we come over and talk? And a few years later, they moved to Jersey. We redid everything that they had. We added on some more children. And unfortunately, we hear these stories. This person, unfortunately, was sick and passed away. And I'll tell you that I'll never forget sitting across from his wife. And when you hand somebody that check, and she said to me, you know what? He thought ahead and he made sure that we were going to be okay. In that moment, I really understood, because, you know, you can write business and you can write these policies, but until you hand somebody that financial check and realize that, what does it really represent? They didn't have to leave their home. They didn't have to be a burden to the community, to their parents, to anybody else, to worry about where they're going to go to school, to stay in their house, how am I going to work? And that's really what it is. It turns love into something lasting, and it's caring. It's just where that financial burden is going to be. You're never able to bring back that spouse, but you're able to there to fulfill the financial need that's going to be there. There's a quote that I saw one time. Some people might think it's a little weird, but I like it. It says, life insurance is the only plan that guarantees to show up at the right time when you can't. And that's exactly what happened. It showed up. You know, people always ask me about the cost of insurance. And estimated a point before, she goes, when should I get a will done? I said, when should you get life insurance? And I always say, yesterday, okay? You know, life insurance today is much more affordable than it was years ago. People are living longer, whether they want to or not. You know, I don't know. But people are living longer. There's modern medicine today. And it has gotten less expensive. And even with people who had, you know, conditions of the past, thank God there were great doctors and people are living. So, you know, there's different types of coverages out there. There's term insurance, there's permanent insurance. We don't have to go into that whole thing right now. There is just different types of insurance. You just got to make sure that you get something that's affordable for you and your family. I look out here now, there's not a lot of what I would call, I'm sorry about that, younger people with their little kids, but we also have people here who now have kids that are married and their grandparents here. And you think about it, you know, I make my duty and I make my job to go out there and push the younger generation who doesn't really want to think about this stuff. Go out there, get it, just buy some insurance. And I tell people, even though they know what I do, if you don't want to do it with me, I can give you a name of 20 other people. There's other people here, there's people out there. You know, people ask me about wills and trusts all the time. You know, I have to give Esther's number all the time. They said, oh, can we have one or two more? Sometimes we give two people, three people, and I'm sure she does the same. In terms of insurance, too, one of the things that the Rebbetzin, it said on the document was long-term care. And that cost money. So it's not just the life insurance today, but the older generation is now looking like, wait a minute, I need to protect my assets. Again, I'm not a lawyer, I'm not near that, but there are things out there to protect you for long-term care. So really, bottom line, and it's hard because I do take this personally. I've handed over many, many checks to people over the past 22 years. We just have to educate people, and to really, for a few dollars a day, not just on, sometimes people, and again, I'm sorry for flustering, there are spouses that are not, what they say, working out of the house. They're home. By the way, those spouses, man, woman, whatever, it's important to get insurance on those people as well. Why do I say that? Because there's a cost, right? You have to go out. There's a cost to them being home. You need to pay somebody now to take people off the bus if that person has to go to work. And again, to be able to pay those bills going forward, it's very, very important. So bottom line, I really feel, go out there. If you don't have enough, tell your friends, tell your kids, tell your grandchildren, tell your parents, but really get it in line. And thank you very much for giving me that opportunity to speak. Any questions or? Okay, sorry.
Can you talk a little bit about the long-term care insurance, you know, how people can access that in the market? Because we're all familiar with auto and life and medical and things like that, companies and other things, but long-term care seems to be elusive. People access that.
Long-term care. So long-term care, there are companies out there that do sell the long-term care. If people are not aware what long-term care is, long-term care insurance is an insurance that will pay if, God forbid, you can't do 2 out of 6 activities of daily living. And your doctor could sign off that you can't do that. And now you need either to go to a nursing home or to go to a facility or to have a nurse to come to your house to take care of you. So there are different insurance carriers out there. Not necessarily you have to take a medical, but you have to be able to fill out a medical questionnaire. And it's there to protect your assets. Where can they get it? Is that what your question is? Like, which companies are out there?
Yeah, in general, like how do people explore it? You don't see commercials for it, you know?
It's right. So you can reach out to usually a financial advisor, and there are many, right? We'll be able to direct you to maybe which company is better. And there are companies you have to take in mind. What about if I'm going to go overseas? You have to figure out other carriers that will pay you if you decide that you now want to live in Israel or you want to go back to a home country, whether it's London, whether it's one of the islands. So you really want to make sure you're getting the right company that's out there. There are also insurance companies like life insurance companies today that are attaching it to their life insurance. So you can have a hybrid type of plan, right, where there are carriers like, well, if I die, I get the life insurance. If not, I can use the benefit towards long-term care. But again, that gets really more into something more in depth, and you can really speak to a financial advisor about that. Thank you.
Thank you again to everybody for coming. Really, again, thank you, Ellie, for setting this up. And to all of our presenters, I never usually say the words gutterment and musicant and refreshments in the same sentence. But I guess we thank God for providing the refreshments. And there's going to be Marv. Oh, so it's not a joke. But like, can we pay for your friends? Like, if you'd like, you could do that. We're not telling people where to go. But and there will also be a Marv at 9:30.
Okay.